The following episode contains material that may be uncomfortable, upsetting, and unsuitable for some audiences. Listener discretion is advised. January 2020 in Celebration, Florida. Now, if you've been to Celebration, you know this small city just around the corner from Walt Disney World is one that steps right off the page of films like The Stepford Wives and Pleasantville. It's a cute and cozy place. Well, when FBI agents arrived at the home of the Tote family to serve 44-year-old Anthony Tote with a federal warning for healthcare fraud charges, they noticed something a little odd. An agent who had been watching the home saw Anthony stumbling around, looking rather shaky and unstable, and he made his way back in the house. And that's when they approached and knocked, and no answer. They knocked again and again, no answer. So they tried the door handle and found it was unlocked. Making their way inside the home, they found Anthony stumbling and mumbling to himself. When they got closer, that's when they noticed it. The smell. A smell that just about anyone would know, and one that stays with you forever. When they approached Anthony, he said that his wife Megan was asleep upstairs, but when he turned and called, there was no answer. The police made their way up the stairs, finding one of the most gruesome scenes. The entire family was found in the master bedroom, all of whom had been murdered. This is the creepy case of the Tote family murders. Hello, fellow fiends. Welcome to the season 6 finale of Creepy Cases and Spooky Spaces. I am your host, Cassie Opea. Don't forget, you can find me every Friday with brand new episodes of the creepiest and spookiest content. If you subscribe to the Patreon or Anchor page, which you can do for as little as $5 a month, you get bonus episodes every other Tuesday. You get a merchandise discount that's good on all of the merchandise in the Wick and Fae shop at pizzaandpigtails.com. Also, you get a thank you welcome box of Creepy Cases and Spooky Spaces swag. I understand sometimes you can't always commit to that monthly subscription, but you still kind of want to support your favorite content creators. you can also send to the Cash App or the Venmo, and anything helps. Nothing is too small. You can also buy merchandise in the shop. You can follow on social media, like, share, comment. That also helps get the podcast seen and helps spread the word, bring in your fellow fiends on those conversations. Also, if you're a small business owner like myself, or a big business owner, because I don't discriminate, I also have ad space coming up in episodes on the next season. So if you are interested in sharing your content and your products, send me an email at creepycases.spookyspaces@gmail.com, and I can send you all of my budget-friendly packages. So let's get started on this week's episode. Anthony Tote, who goes by Tony, was born in Bensalem, Pennsylvania, to Robert and Loretta Tote. Now, after his father attempted to have his mother murdered, which I'll get into that later in the episode, she moved to Connecticut and remarried, and Tony adjusted to life as best he could. Now, while attending Montville High School, he met Megan Gula, an active young woman who was a drum major, a tennis player, and after reading about her, someone that I tend to kind of would love to be like. She lived a health-conscious lifestyle, attended her own garden, growing her own food. She cooked from scratch. She was really into music and played the flute, the piano, and the folk guitar. The couple fell in love and stayed together all through college, both attending Sacred Heart University, where Megan actually received her master's degree. Now, after graduation, they got married and moved to Colchester, Connecticut, where they opened a shared family-owned and run physical therapy practice, where Anthony offered physical therapy and Megan taught yoga classes. Now, they were pretty successful. They were kind of the go-to for anything in the physical therapy world, and Anthony was a man of the community and did a lot of good. He was a soccer coach, he worked with disabled children, and the family was always helping out. And they even raised money for a pregnant woman who had been severely assaulted. Now, it wasn't much later when they started to expand their family, welcoming their first child in 2006, a little boy that they named Alexander. 2 years later, they had Tyler, and Zoe came along in 2015. Now, this was when Megan actually became a stay-at-home mother and would homeschool the kiddos. Now, they seemed like the perfect family, a loving husband and wife who adored their children, but they were described as humble, even though they basically had it all. The family was well known and very well liked in the community of Colchester. The children were involved in the arts and music, and both Alec and Tyler loved to read and were outstanding pianists. Now, Alec was a little more on the quiet side, but once you pulled him out of that shell, he'd be your best friend. Well, Tyler was the comic relief, like any middle child. Thank you. And he was a great actor. Now, little Zoe, well, she was energetic and cute, and she was 4 years old, but she wasn't really active in anything, but she was going to be starting ballet soon. In 2012, the year actually kind of changes in different resources, but Megan contracted Lyme disease from being bitten by a tick. And it was said she began to suffer from bouts of depression, and she became a little more reserved and isolated. In 2017, the family decided to move to Florida. They had taken many trips to the area and just fell in love, and they thought it may be a good way to give Megan a little more spark and kind of a change of scenery, so why not? They decided that they would keep the practice in Connecticut, and Tony would actually go back and forth between the two locations. Now, the next few years would show that you can't always judge a book or a family by its cover. By 2019, Anthony was diagnosed with diabetes. And in April of that year, it was actually discovered that he was charging patients for care that they never received. And police began to investigate, and it was revealed that he was using this money to pay for his homes in Celebration. And yes, I said homes. And they had a condo and a rental home. And if you've ever looked into the prices in Celebration, you would know that they're not cheap. I've looked into it because I too would love to live there. But that's, you know, someday. So they also used this money for trips to Disney World. Multiple loans had been taken out in New York City, which those companies were now suing. And Anthony was actually in over $100,000 in debt. In May of 2019, there was an eviction suit filed for alleged non-payment on the rental home in Celebration. The court records show that in three states, the Totes were under extreme financial pressure. At first, Tony claimed that he was innocent on all the fraud charges, but he eventually broke down and admitted that he was in fact charging for basically services he wasn't providing. Now, it's believed that Megan was completely unaware of this because she was hands off of the company at this moment. She wasn't really focused on the practice at all. She was focused on the kids. And she actually wasn't even going back and forth to Connecticut. She was staying in Florida. Now, in November, patients were contacted by the staff at the physical therapy office saying that Anthony had a family emergency and would be flying down to Florida to be with them and to just kind of take care of everything. Now, patients became really confused when they weren't getting their rescheduled appointments, and no one could answer where Tony was or when he'd be back. Now, out of the blue, patients were actually called and told that the office would be shutting down permanently. Things became even more confusing in December when relatives of the Tote family couldn't reach them. Now, they tried to contact neighbors who said that they hadn't seen the family either, and they actually thought they were up north for the holidays. The family became worried, especially when Megan's aunt received a text message that she said just seemed off. Megan had texted her saying that the family was taking a trip to St. Augustine and they wouldn't have their phones on them. But then she sent a text message saying that the entire family was sick with the flu and she couldn't talk on the phone. But she was really put off when she then received a message from Tony telling her that they had just arrived in St. Augustine and they would be going off-grid. Now, as much as I love St. Augustine, I visit, you know, multiple times a year, I'd be a little skeptical of this because you were just told that the entire family was sick with the flu, yet now you're taking a trip out to St. Augustine. Even if you had this trip planned, if everybody's sick with the flu, why wouldn't you just reschedule when everybody's feeling better? Especially if you're so sick that you can't talk on the phone. Things just don't add up for me there. Now, after this, though, no one had heard anything, so family on all sides began to worry. On December 29th, Tony's sister called to have police do a welfare check. Now, if you're unfamiliar with a welfare check, they're pretty common when family members who live a good distance away call police or call, you know, the local just department to go out and check on a family member. Like they go by their house just to see if everything's okay. A lot of elderly people, maybe they fell, maybe they're in distress, maybe they need help, things like that. Now, police arrived at the home and the blinds were shut. The lights were off. Their doors were locked. There was no movement or any sound coming from the home. So they just assumed that the family was on one of their trips. They said they were in St. Augustine. So a couple of weeks go by and nobody had heard from Tony or Megan. So on January 10th, his sister calls again. Now, at this around the same time, their landlord actually called for a welfare check as well because they were behind on their rent. No one had heard from anyone in the family for over a month. Mail was piling up on their porch, and the eviction notice on their front door was actually untouched. Then the FBI called for a welfare check to be done. Now, they were trying to get a hold of Tony because he had been served with this warrant for fraud charges, and he told them that he had a family emergency, he had to go to Florida to take care of things, and that he'd be back, and he'd reach out to them when he returned to Connecticut. Only he never made it back. Now, on January 13th, agents arrived at the Tope family home in Celebration, Florida. They were actually there to serve Tony an arrest warrant for the failure to appear to the original hearing, but they got way more than they bargained for. The agent watching the home saw Tony come outside, and he noted that Tony looked very unstable, a little shaky, and kind of sick. When he made his way back inside, FBI agents made their way to the door. Now, when they knocked, there was no answer. Now, knowing that Tony was inside because they had literally just watched him go in there, they knocked again. And again, no answer. On a whim, they tried the door handle. Finding it unlocked, they cautiously made their way inside. Now, amongst my research, I actually found two different scenarios as to how the rest of the confrontation played out. One claimed that Tony was just kind of sitting on the couch in the living room, just kind of relaxing. They said that he seemed weak, tired, and only partially coherent. When asked where Megan and the kids were, he said that Megan was asleep upstairs and the kids were just probably sleeping over at a friend's house. Now, another source said they found Tony at the top of the stairs, just kind of mumbling to himself and struggling to even walk. When agents asked him where Megan and the kids were, he said that they were sleeping upstairs, and he turned to call out. He called a few times, but there was no response from anybody. When agents began to climb the stairs, that's when they noticed the smell. And like I said, it's a smell just about anyone would know, and it's one that will stay with you forever. Upon entering the master bedroom, they found 42-year-old Megan on the bed, and on a mattress next to it was the bodies of 13-year-old Alec and 11-year-old Tyler. And on a small bed next to that was the body of the family dog, Breezy. Now, all of the bodies were lacking in color and in advanced stage of decomposition, leading agents to believe that they had been there for like a couple of weeks. All had been stabbed in the stomach, smothered, and all had gripped crucifixes in their hands. Now, at first, agents couldn't find 4-year-old Zoe, so they actually went back to Tony and they started asking him, Where's Zoe? Well, he couldn't answer, and he just kind of kept mumbling to himself. Now, this is when he actually told agents that he had taken a large amount of Benadryl in an attempt to take his own life, so they called for an ambulance and took him to a nearby hospital for evaluation. Upon examining Megan's body, agents finally found Zoe. She was wrapped in a blanket at Megan's feet on the bed. She was, you know, a 4-year-old. She's already so tiny, but she was so far decomposed that she was hidden. She is the only one who does look like she had not been stabbed. So I guess that's a good thing. Now, this is when Tony admitted to police that he killed his family and the dog, Breezy. He was involuntarily committed to the hospital on a watch known as a Baker Act. He was arrested and charged with 4 counts of first-degree murder and 1 count of animal cruelty. Now, news of what happened shocked neighbors in multiple communities. No one could believe that Tony was capable of performing such horrendous acts. He was a loving husband to an energetic wife, an adoring father of you know, talented children. He was well-liked. He was helpful in all the places that he lived. He gave back to the community. He helped disabled children. This was just one that no one saw coming. Theories began swirling as to why Tony would murder his entire family in such a massacre. Now, most linked it to the rising financial pressure. He was under investigation by the FBI and the Inspector General Office in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services for the fraud charges. He had a number of short-term loans and his business owed over $100,000. Now, although authorities said Anthony confessed to the murders, he began to claim that he wasn't even home when Megan, Alec, Tyler, Zoe, and Breezy were killed. He told his sister, Chrissy Caplet, in a taped jailhouse call, "I couldn't stop this because I wasn't there." They say that he was in the home for up to 3 weeks with the bodies. Now, Anthony Tote pleaded not guilty to all counts. Now, Osceola County Medical Examiner's Office announced the official cause of death was homicide violence of unspecified means, along with diphenhydramine toxicity. Whew, say that three times fast. Now, diphenhydramine is the drug known as Benadryl. The bodies also had stab wounds to the abdomen, except Zoe, and they had been smothered. Now, in this confession, Tony said he and his wife had actually talked to the children about dying and said that the kids told them, "We want to die with you." And I'm totally not buying that. And if the kids did say this, there was either some manipulation or something was said to them that either scared them so bad that they would want to die, or they were definitely told that something would happen if they didn't. Now, originally, he told police that Zoe was the first one he killed. He said he sat on her bed for hours before he rolled over and began smothering her. He said that she started to kind of swivel and began struggling, so he put his hand over her mouth and nose and laid on her until she stopped breathing. He said that he needed to save her soul. After this, he made his way to the bedroom, stabbed Alec, and this was when Alec started kicking and trying to get up, so he held his hand over his mouth and nose, suffocating him. He then went into the playroom where Tyler was asleep on a couch, where he suffocated and stabbed him as well. And he said that he was worried about Tyler because he was the fastest, and if there was one thing that didn't go to plan, he was worried about him getting away. He said that then Megan took a bottle of Benadryl and stabbed herself. When this failed to kill her, he then suffocated her. He took the bodies of all the family into the master bedroom, and he said that he wanted to join them. Tony's trial began at the Osceola County Courthouse in Kissimmee, Florida on April 11th, 2022. Prosecutor Danielle Pinnell presented Tote exactly what he told detectives. He and Megan had agreed to kill the entire family. Robert Wesley, who was a public defender, requested that Judge Keith Karsten keep his confessions out of the courtroom because they were made under duress, they were made under circumstances that just make you question. Well, there was only one that was kept out because the Miranda rights weren't actually read to him properly, and that's actually the one from the hospital where he first initially confessed. Now, according to Tony, allegedly Megan had been watching videos about how to achieve salvation due to an oncoming apocalypse, and so she and Tony had made a pact. They believed the family couldn't be together in the afterlife if they didn't die and pass over at the same time. So he took the stand saying, this is quote, "I came home and my kids were dead. It was also the most horrible day of my life. What made it more horrible was my wife died in front of me also," end quote. Now, this was when he also implied that Megan was ill and an invalid who was so sick she couldn't walk up the stairs or take care of herself. And he blamed the Lyme disease and multiple miscarriages that Megan had suffered over the recent years. He claimed that she was the one who drugged the kids with a Benadryl pudding pie, stabbed them, and smothered them before killing herself. And he said that there had actually been multiple attempts over the recent months, and that this was the reason he was stuck in Florida and couldn't return to Connecticut to keep up the family business going. He also included this information in the letter to his father, Robert, and I'll actually add the link that to the letter in the show notes so you can read the whole thing. I'll warn you, it's about 31 pages long, which that's not a problem. But the handwriting is a little hard to read. It kind of goes in and out of like print and cursive, and some of the cursive is a little flimsy. I don't know how to, it's just hard to read. But if you're interested, I'll go ahead and put that in the show notes. Now, of course, I also have to say that if Megan was so sick that she couldn't walk upstairs or take care of herself, and how in the world does she have the strength to drug, stab, and suffocate 3 children and also kill the family dog? Like, I just don't find that to be at all, like, possible. On April 13th, 2022, Tony stated, "My testimony is fact. That Megan killed her kids and killed herself." Now, Pennell actually caught something that I caught as well, and I'm not sure if you caught on to it. I'm pretty sure some of you have. But when reading this, Tony described himself as the loyal, "I'll do anything for my family and I'll do anything for Megan. I'll take blame for Megan for what she did to the kids." But what's interesting is he says Megan killed her kids. He didn't say Megan killed our kids. He didn't say Megan killed my kids. He said Megan killed her kids. Now, I just think that wording is just interesting. Now, on April 14th, 2022, Anthony Tote was found guilty on all counts. He was sentenced to 4 consecutive life terms without the possibility of parole. And just as a little bit more of a dig, he was actually given, and I love this, an extra year for killing Breezy, the family dog. And I'm just glad that the little pup got some justice too. Now, Robert told Hearst Connecticut media, quote, "It was difficult to take. If you look at how he was and listen to what went on, there's a lot of things there that didn't make a whole lot of sense. It just didn't seem right," end quote. He claims that when you Baker Act someone, you can't really go on their confession, and they're basically just deemed out of it, and you can't really hold any stock in what they say. He said you can't take someone after a tragic situation and expect the truth out of them. It's distorted. Tony doesn't remember a whole lot. It doesn't seem as if he was competent during this time. I can see that. However, his story, like, even if they made a pact and they were going to kill the kids together, don't then just blame it on Megan. Like, come on, just take your comeuppance, man. Robert hopes that Tony can be placed in a mental health facility and knows that Tony is trying to file an appeal, but he also knows it's hard to win these, and he knows this because he has firsthand experience. Now, in 1981, in a courtroom outside of Philadelphia Common, Alan Rubinstein presented a case that had entranced the area for months. A local teacher husband, father of 2, had attempted to have his wife murdered. The man, Robert Tote, Anthony's father, which goes beyond the murder attempt, included his 4-year-old son, Tony. Now, he didn't actually like want to include Tony in the role to be murdered, but Tony did hear his mother scream before she was shot in the face. Now, I mean, just miraculously, she survived. She was shot in the eye, which she did lose her eye, but she had a bullet wedged in, like, basically sitting in her skull for quite a while. And Robert had everyone fooled. He had his wife, Loretta, fooled. She actually didn't even believe that he had set it up for her to be murdered. It actually took her a long time to accept this. He had his girlfriend fooled. She was 17, by the way. and his fiance, who lived in a neighboring town. Oh, and the priest, who had agreed to marry them. He was found guilty of hiring a former student with developmental disabilities for $800. He provided a key to the home, he provided the gun, and he provided instructions. Now, although Loretta stood by Robert for a little bit, she finally accepted and came to terms that he is the one who basically hired someone to kill her. He was found guilty, and when he filed an appeal, it was denied. And it seems that Tony followed a little too closely in his father's footsteps. Now, Megan was a beautiful soul who always treated others with kindness and patience and could light up a room with her brilliant smile. Her life was defined by the love that she held on so strongly for her children, and her entire being was encompassed in her motherhood. And she did whatever she could to support her family. She had a zest for life and learning, and for giving her children that same enthusiastic curiosity. Alec was extremely bright and gifted. He had a quiet confidence. He excelled in his schoolwork, and especially in English and history. He was an avid reader and interested in military history, mostly. He loved to learn from his great-grandfather, Max, and his grandfather, Bud, who were actually in the military, so he loved listening to those stories. Well, Tyler was the comic relief and loved to make everyone laugh and smile. He was quick to joke and play around and had a carefree nature, but always carried a concern for each other for others as well. Now, little Zoe was full of life and known to everyone as Princess Zoe. She was always laughing and smiling and singing. She treasured every moment she got to sing and dance and was eager to start her ballet lessons. Now, Breezy, the family pup, became a part of the family in June 2014. Breezy went everywhere with the family and served them well as their loyal and faithful companion. Now, while we'll never actually know what happened in the home and why, we'll never know the actual motive that the family was massacred, and I feel really sad that he pushed it all on to Megan because she wasn't even there to defend herself in these accusations. And I get, you know, he's trying to save himself. However, man, just like I said, take your comeuppance. Now, was it for the apocalypse? Was Tony just embarrassed about the fraud charges and the debt that the family was in? People say that he actually has no remorse for what he did. So clearly, he believes that he was right. And on that note, I will see you next season.
You've been listening to Creepy Cases and Spooky Spaces, a Pizza and Pigtails production. Created and hosted by Cassie Opea. All episodes researched, written, and edited by yours truly. Don't forget, you can find new episodes of the creepiest and spookiest content every Friday on your favorite podcast listening platform, and now YouTube as well. Subscribe to the Patreon page or the anchor.fm page for as little as $5 a month for bonus episodes every other Tuesday, a merchandise discount, and a Creepy Cases and Spooky Spaces thank you swag box. You can also support without subscribing through the Cash App and Venmo. Don't forget to follow along on social media, especially the Facebook and the Instagram page, creepycases.spookyspaces, for all future news and updates related to the podcast, and maybe see some content that's not featured here. Like, comment, and share with your fellow fiends to get that conversation started. And on that note, I'll see you next crime.